Welcome to Monster Men.
Darr! What's up, Jackie?
Welcome. How you doing?
Whiskey Jack compared to Hunter Beer. And well,
in honor of our guest, I'm using my
Bigfoot. Oh. It's a very Bigfoot night.
I have just very cheap Yingling beer.
But who is our guest, Hunter?
Our guest is someone I have known about for quite a while. It's been a while.
Likewise.
So this is very exciting that we get to talk in person, kind of, for the first time. It's author Kristen Dearborn. Woohoo! Yay! And she's here tonight because I was fortunate enough to get an advanced reading copy of her latest book that's out now, Faith of Dawn. Oh my God, look at that cover. So sweet.
Awesome.
That's a Zach McCain cover.
Zach McCain does good stuff.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, I love this cover. When your publicist showed me this, I was like, yes. I didn't even know who the author was. I just saw the cover. I'm like, yes, send it. And then when she said it was you, I was like, hell yes, I'll do anything you want. So welcome to the show.
I am so excited to be here.
Now, this is amazing. Let me tell you, anybody who writes about cryptids has a free pass to come on Monster Men.
Yes.
Now, I want to ask you, what got you to write about skunk apes?
Yes.
Because as far as I know, isn't this your first, like, dip your toe into the cryptid world, or am I wrong?
Yes. I've done other monsters before. I wrote a book set in the Philippines that kind of relies on the Aswang legend. So that's monster. I've done nebulous New England snow monsters. I did rampaging alligators, but this is my first cryptid.
And man, what a cryptid to choose.
Time out. What was Aswind? What did you say?
Close. I'm probably butchering the pronunciation. Aswang, Aswang. It's a creepy vampire from the Philippines that has some associations with eating black chicks and creepy vampire stuff.
You had me.
He's a vampire, dude.
Had me a vampire.
Okay.
And now the name Ass Wang is what he's going to call it.
Ass Wang, yeah.
Everybody Ass Wang Chung tonight.
And suck your blood. Now, I've known you to be, I guess, a naturalist. You're always out hiking. I see lots of pictures of you out in nature. Mm-hmm. In all the years that you've been out and about in the wilderness, whereas for Jack and I, the wilderness is like the backyard. Preferably with a couple of drinks and some colony pizza to share. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen or heard anything that made you go, that doesn't sound right?
No.
Oh.
I'm so sad about that. I did take my dog backpacking for the first time. So my dog is an 80-pound black lab mix with bad knees. Right now we're recovering from our second ACL surgery. So please buy my book so I can buy new stainless steel dog knees. After the first surgery, we went out backpacking. We were kind of out in the middle of nowhere. There were these two other guys who were in the same general vicinity. And in the middle of the night, she woke up. She was clearly terrified. And she just like put all of her 80 pounds on top of me. And she was like shaking and cowering.
Were you like, hey, thanks for being such a good guard dog.
Yeah. And then we went back to sleep and maybe that was a Bigfoot. It could have been.
I mean, has she ever been around bears?
No, she's a condo dog.
That could be describing Jack and I too.
So,
and we have the same reaction to a bear or a Bigfoot.
She's the size of a bear.
Really?
I was once we went whitewater rafting up in Maine and camping out, and then the campground there was a bathroom. So me and my buddy from the campsite walked up in the dark to the whatever outhouse, and there was no lights, but just the light from further away. And we walk up to the building, and all of a sudden this thing just lumbers around the corner. And we both stopped in our tracks like, oh my God, it's a bear. We're dead. And I think both of us thought, like, can I push the other one into it so I can run away? But we both froze. And then, like, we realized it was just a huge dog.
You're scared of a dog. All right.
Oh my God. Well, for a split second, because both, I said, dude, I thought that was a bear. He goes, oh my God, so did I.
I think the Maine woods is scary in a special way that, like, Vermont and New Hampshire aren't, because the Maine woods are so big and there are so few people. Like, the White Mountains, there's a lot going on there. There's mountains. People die on Mount Washington, but there's a ton of tourists and a ton of hikers. And if you go far in any direction, you're going to hit a road. You're going to get hit something. But right. Maine is really big.
Yeah, especially when you go from like mid to north, there's nothing.
There's nothing.
I mean, you don't get a lot of Bigfoot reports up there, but also there aren't any people up there.
There's Wendigos.
Yeah. Step over the line, you're in Wendigo land. I heard you were born and grew up in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
What part of Maine?
I grew up in Hollowell, Maine, which is next to the state capital, Augusta, Maine.
Oh, civilized.
Mm-hmm.
And I love a town called Bridgeton, Maine.
Yes.
Southwest corner of Cumberland County. That's, we've been going there all my life. In fact, we moved to Pennsylvania, but one on the table was moving to Maine.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, because of the pandemic, New Yorkers and people from Boston ruined it. And the pricing of everything was out of control. I'm like, I could pay this in New York.
I came to Vermont as well.
My friend has a lake house up in that area. There's a place called Hussey's that sold wedding dresses and guns.
Mm-hmm.
So that's near.
That's near Augusta. Yep.
I've had a couple of really fun afternoons in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Wedding gowns and guns.
Oh, dude. You walk
and beer.
And beer. You walk in and the first floor is like a grocery store and souvenirs. And if you go downstairs, it's like a hardware store. But if you go upstairs, one side is like guns and ammo and crossbows and all that. And the other side is wedding dresses.
I love it.
And it's got this iconic sign advertising those three items.
Yeah.
This is why I love New England.
New England
is my favorite place on earth.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So you live up in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
Skunk apes are like a Florida thing.
Yeah.
So do you have history in Florida?
Every time I go to Florida, my muse just like punches me. My last two books have been Florida books. There's the Thethodon and then The Amazing Alligator Girl, which is about an airboat ride gone terribly, terribly wrong. There's rampaging alligators. There's swamp Nazis.
So I looked on your website and saw that I was going to ask you about swamp Nazis because I want to read your new book, but I think I want to read that first.
It's more fun. It's shorter and more fun.
That works for me.
Jack takes a while to read. So if it's short, It's so funny because the first cryptid I ever wrote about was skunk apes.
Nice.
I was literally up. I could not sleep. And I was watching Bar Rescue. And my editor had hit me up and I was like, oh, all right. What's up, man? He says, hey, do you have a new book idea? What are you thinking of? And I'm looking at John Taffer. I'm going, if you put a lot of hair on him, I bet he'd look like a skunk ape. And then within a half an hour, I had this concept of one of those fan boats in the Everglades. Except I didn't have Nazis. Mm. They ran over a baby skunk ape and then were tracked by a horde of skunk apes as they tried to get out of the Everglades.
And then his skunk ape kicked in the door of a sports bar and said, this kitchen is filthy.
You'll kill someone. But now we need to go on the road with these two books.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Probably to Florida.
I'm down.
So I was looking forward to being in a room with two people who know a lot about skunk apes because I hadn't heard of one until I started hanging out with him. We did a whole show on cryptids. So I was exposed to it then, and then he wrote the book, and I was like, okay, so they're Southern Bigfoots, and his book is hilarious to a horror fan, or mortifying to a normie. Is there something specific about Bigfoot and skunk apes, or is it just you love monsters in general, and this was one that fit the story? Or
I love monsters in general. This was one that fit the story. I think it's neat that Bigfoot has regional offshoots. We've got Yetis. We've got the skunk ape. I'm trying to think of other ones. Other geographical.
Momo, the Yeren.
Yeah.
The Yowie. There's a lot.
Momo.
Mm-hmm. Momo.
I did some research. I went to the main cryptozoology museum down in Portland and
did some had book signings there. I love
it. I believe it.
Lauren Coleman gave me an idea to write the Dober Demon book because I think maybe just hanging out, and he was like, come over here, look at this. Nobody writes about this guy right here. And then he came up with an idea, and I said, well, that's why you're the cryptozoologist who runs a museum. I'm going to go a different way. And the best part was I ended up on a TV show talking about the Dober Demon like I'm an expert. I'm like, I just wrote this fictionalized book. I'm an idiot. But it was kind of funny.
Yeah, when I was watching it, I was yelling at the screen, you're an idiot!
I felt that. I was recording
maybe that. Maybe the Dober Demon was too.
Very well could be. I don't know whether Dober Demon is a cryptid, an alien, or just a lot of drinking.
One of our goals is to do a show from the Cryptozoology Museum.
That'd be pretty cool.
It's moved. It's now in Bangor, Maine. So
is that going to be its final home?
Probably. Yeah. He's invested a lot in that right now. And they're still putting stuff together there.
So I went first when it was in Green Hand Bookshop in the back room, which that's such a cool bookstore. And then I went when it was next to, what's the beer company there?
The Bissell Brewing Company. Bissell.
Yep. I went when it was next to Bissell. So I guess I'm just going to have to go back.
He was in a great spot in Portland because you had the museum, you had Bissell Brewing, and across they had like this hall. And I went there once for a cryptozoology conference. And I spent more time in Bissell Brewing. You see him? I would just look at my neighbor, go watch my table. Mm-hmm. I'll be back.
They're pretty IPA heavy.
Yeah. I don't know how I made it to my hotel after that day. I made it to a hotel and then to a drive-in that night. I'm going to a drive-in. And I just passed out in my car.
I've never been to a drive-in movie.
No way.
I don't know. Fun facts about me.
Well, they're few and far between now, so I can kind of believe that. There used to be a couple near me, and those are long gone. Now, I think last time I went to one, it was a pop-up one during the pandemic.
Yeah, for you, it's probably an hour and a half for you to get to Warwick in New York.
Mm-hmm. There's one in Connecticut, too, because we covered a high school graduation that was at a
Mansfield. I went there during the pandemic.
We've got one not too far from here, so I really have no excuses.
No, none. When I moved to Pennsylvania here, I'm surrounded by three.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm in hog heaven. I want to volunteer to work at all three of them. Mm-hmm. One of them's open year round. We went to see the thing there in the freezing cold. It was perfect.
Mm-hmm. So you pick a skunk ape, and you're obviously going to have a lot of fun with it. How do you pick the story around it? And what is the kind of the frame of the story of your book?
So the frame of the story is that we have a Afghanistan veteran who she comes back, she's lost a leg in the war, and she is an incredibly damaged person. She's not a very pleasant person. She's going through marital troubles. She hears that these two young women have gone missing near her hometown in Florida and gets it in her head that she can save her marriage if she can be the hero and rescue these two young women. So she goes back home to where she grew up in Florida, reconnects with some of the people from her past, and none of it's good, and there are skunk apes. It's bad news.
And something else that, to me, is worse than skunk apes. Like there's an underlying current going on in that town that I was like, oh, what you did is brutal.
The header for an interview that I did was suicide cults and skunk apes. So I guess that cats out of the bag that there is a suicide cult. And
see, I didn't want to reveal that part, but yeah, I mean,
it's been revealed.
That's a great combination. And you took a real chance because you created your protagonist as a really deeply flawed human being.
A lot of people have not been enjoying her, but a lot of people have been. And I think she really grows through the book. She's a very different person at the end of the book than she is at the beginning. And she's pretty awful in the beginning of the book.
Yeah, she's a straight up stalker, you know, but you're right. There is growth through the entire book. And you know what? I've got friends who are pretty ugly people, but there's part of them that I enjoy. And I like the fact that every hero doesn't have to be like Captain America fresh out of the box, you know? Mm-hmm. So I love that you took a chance with that because I really liked reading her character and seeing all the different points where she definitely evolved. And maybe it's that orneriness that she had in her that kept her going when other people were just like, screw this, I'm out.
Yeah. But the idea from the story, so many years ago, I was dating a fellow and his parents live in the Villages in Florida, which is the retirement community.
That place.
I think we've all heard of it.
Yeah. So
we went to go visit. And on the way there, we were driving through the Ocala National Forest. And his mom made a comment like, oh, don't go there. People go missing there. There's a lot of bad people who are there. Don't go there. So my little writer ears were like, ooh. We got to their house. It had been a ton of flight delays. So my partner was like, I want to take a nap. And I was like, I got to Google this forest where people go missing. And I didn't find anything. Nothing bad about the Ocala National Forest. Some pictures of really pretty forest. But the idea was in my head that it's this place where there are bad people there. There's seedy people and people go missing.
Right.
So I started writing then and there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I wouldn't think so much as monsters, but I think of meth heads.
Yes.
And other folks crawling around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I think about down there, I think I'm more scared of gators and snakes and spiders and bugs and stuff in those parts. And
when I had a draft of the book, this was several years later, I went down and stayed at an Airbnb and wanted to explore the Ocala National Forest. And yes, there are many bugs, gators. I walked through a tick nest. That was lots of ticks. Yeah.
Did any cat latch onto you?
Just one.
I had my first tick latching in Maine last year. And I was in a very bad spot. It's like,
not good.
I went to my wife and said, honey, I think there's something on me.
Oh,
can you look?
You know those mossy trees down in Florida?
Oh, yes. There's
this great bar near my friend's parents' house on a lake in this neighborhood. Like Gator Joe's or something like that.
That's fun.
And there's a bunch of those trees out front. So as we're walking out or something, I'm like jumping up and slapping the moss. And my friend's dad is like, oh, don't touch those. There's like, I forget what the hell, bacteria or bugs or whatever. Like, he's like, don't touch the moss. So the whole ride home, I'm like, oh God.
Yeah. I mean, we were complaining about the cold in our respective where we lives, but the cold goes a long way in killing the creepy crawlies. So.
Yes, it does. I'm surrounded by deer here and I'm glad all the ticks are dead for now, but I'm sure we'll all have Lyme disease by the end of the summer.
Yeah.
It's unavoidable.
Now, the genesis of this show is that Hunter and I worked together, became friends like 5 minutes into knowing each other because we started talking about Spider-Man. He had a bobblehead doll on his desk.
Of all things.
That led to all the other stuff we had in common. So basically we're like, oh, we grew up at the exact same time watching the same TV mm-hmm. shows. Mm-hmm. And then when we started Monster Man, it was basically, what would our conversation be like at a bar about horror movies and other stuff, but we'll just film it. So we often go, you know, trace our tracks of watching Kolchak, The Night Stalker, and Creature Feature, and Search all that stuff. So what's kind of your journey as a horror fan and, you mm-hmm. know, and then getting into writing?
So I have been writing since before I could write. I was dictating stories to my mother when I was very small and telling her stories that I wanted her to write down. I think it all started with Benicula. You familiar with the title of Benicula?
Yeah.
I don't think I know that.
Children's book where this family finds a vampire rabbit and the family dog and the family cat are out to save the family.
I remember the vampire rabbit.
It's really cute. But my parents are both avid readers. I come from a long line of readers, so there were always books in the house and there were always horror books in the house. And being in Maine, there's a state law that you have to have X number of Stephen King books on display at any time. So I was reading that when I was far too young, not understanding what I was reading, but I knew it was taboo and I really wanted to read it. I think I started with The Stand.
That's one hell of a way to start.
Yeah. It was the abridged version, though.
Still. That's what, 900 pages as opposed to 1,200?
Really, that's like six books.
So, and then I remember finding this box of paperback books in our attic, and there was, like, I think Rosemary's Baby was in there, Harvest Home was in there, a bunch of Robin Cook, all sorts of good stuff. Michael Crichton, I was a huge Michael Crichton fan. I read a ton of Dean Koontz. Jurassic Park is pretty much my... Jurassic Park and Stephen King are pretty much my two reasons for being who I am.
Okay. So what's your favorite Stephen King book?
The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon.
Wow.
That's got Jack excited right there.
It's
Mine is
scary.
Joyland.
Oh, Joyland's good.
Yeah. That book, I first read that book like 2 months after my dad passed away, and I was reading it on a hammock in Maine by the lake. And I'll never forget, there was a bunch of people around. I finished reading and I sat on the hammock crying. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't cry every time I read it now, but I read it every year since then because that's just a piece of perfection.
He's good.
He is. I mean, there's something about his characters.
Absolutely.
And the way he writes, like he can mention a character on page 30 and bring him back 200 pages later and you feel like you still know them.
It's like, I still have these visceral memories about side characters in his books years after reading them. Like the farting mailman who gets eaten by Cujo.
Right.
He's never left me behind.
Yeah, he creates a village.
He does.
Really get to know these people.
And then he kills the village.
He sure does.
Yay! Everybody must die. What about movies? Were you allowed to watch still scary horror movies?
No, I was not. I was given an adult library card at a very young age, but movies I had to be sneaky about. And I can remember we had the downstairs TV and then a TV in my parents' bedroom upstairs. And you know how remotes used to have the previous channel button?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can remember watching The Howling 3, excellent piece of cinema that, with my finger just over the previous channel, listening for somebody coming up the stairs so I wouldn't get busted.
I remember messing with cable boxes. Because, you know, my parents are so cheap. So, and we would just like put screwdrivers in certain areas and you could get kind of like a fuzzy channel just so you could watch anything remotely scary.
Oh, once we got the cable, we got the hot box, so we had like the channels.
Yeah,
but before that, like even though they were edited for television, I put on, you know, the channel 11 at midnight was always a horror movie, mm-hmm. and my parents were not, I mean, I was friggin' 7 years old, 8 years old, and then like getting up in the middle of the night scared and stuff, and you know, my parents were like whatever.
Yeah, we were lucky because we had a movie theater 3 blocks from the house, and then we had 2 drive-ins within 20 minutes. So, and my dad, I don't think he believed in babysitters. So it's like, come on, we're going to go see The Exorcist. I mean, I saw everything, everything. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. What is he, 4? Come on, let's go. Let's watch that. And for, I didn't react to it. I liked it. Mm-hmm. Which was maybe an issue, but that's why he kept bringing me.
Kristen, I got a question for you. So Hunter and I have told each other these stories a million times, but there's always like that one movie you saw that scared the hell out of you when you were probably too young to see it. So Hunter's was Horror Express.
Which mine is was laughable.
Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
Okay.
Which my dad and I were sitting by the fire watching it. And then he went upstairs for something, and I flicked. I don't know if we were watching that movie, but nothing was happening. And then he went upstairs, or I flicked the channel. But anyway, when he came back downstairs, I was like hiding underneath the friggin' blanket, but like glued to it, but like terrified of it. Is there anything like that that you?
Oh, I'm not coming up with anything. Like, I'm remembering.
How about a movie that just disturbed you? Doesn't have to be you were too young for it.
So I'm not answering your question, but when I watched The Lost Boys for the first time, that one just knocked my socks off. It's scary, it's funny, it's clever, and that made me, it was like, I want to make people feel the way that movie is making me feel right now. And that like gave me a new creative aspiration.
Right.
So
you I'm just
Joel Schumacher.
Yeah. You just led into what I was going to ask you. When you're writing a horror novel, it's easy to pick a monster. It's not easy to scare somebody. So is scaring somebody even on the agenda, or is it just a byproduct, or is there like a method to, okay, I'm going to make a scene that's gross or scary or whatever. What, is there a thought process in the horror part of it?
And I like to think about what could be worse? What could be worse? What's worse than that? And kind of following that line of thought. And I think it's easier to kill characters than it is to have characters living with trauma. So I think try to play with some worse than murder is my goal.
Well, you found it with Faith at Dawn.
I did.
You really did. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to send you a copy of my Swamp Monster Massacre.
Yay!
Do you have it nearby?
I just found the book on tape that you gave me.
Oh, the Mail Order Massacres. I just love the
Mail Order Massacre.
Yeah, because there was something in your book and my book that are very similar, and it made me feel warm and fuzzy that someone else is equally as demented as I am.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate that.
My skunk apes were drugged, and they didn't want to do those bad things that they did. They were coerced.
Sure, that's what all those frat boys say. I don't believe them either. By the way, you mentioned
too.
You mentioned Lost Boys. I named my daughter Star because of that movie.
Nice.
I remember I was with a girl, and I was like, man, if I ever have a daughter, I don't care who my wife is. She has no choice. That kid's name is Star. Luckily, I married someone who didn't object.
That's good.
And it's I changed my name to Kiefer. So what, any monster in your sights next, or down, is there a wish list of, I want to get a Yeti in or a witch or.
So I want to write a horror novel about the mountain K2 in the Himalayas. And I feel like I would be doing a disservice if there wasn't a Yeti. When Dan Simmons wrote Abominable, there was no Yeti, maybe. And I was very disappointed about that.
Me so too.
That book disappointed me and made me sad. But I feel like I would have to throw a Yeti in there. I don't want to do too many humanoid, hairy cryptids in a row. So I need to.
Yeah, it's good to mix it up.
Yeah.
Have you ever scaled that particular peak?
That is probably the most difficult mountain in the world. I believe it's the second tallest. It's killed, I think, I might be making these up, but I think it's killed more than half of the people who have summited it. Oh, and back in the day, Aleister Crowley was a huge mountaineering guy, and he had a failed attempt summiting K2. So there's got to be something to this mountain that just kills people, Aleister Crowley, and Yetis.
That's brilliant.
I don't know what it is yet. I have haven't gotten past that.
That's okay. Just let that swim around and swim around.
Yep.
You're like going to be doing something different one day and be like, oh, I got it.
Writing a book about Aleister Crowley's attempted climb of that would be fun.
He got too far from hell and he had to come back down.
He doesn't seem like very good company.
Maybe not. He could be a load of laughs.
Well, I don't. From my research, he didn't seem like a very nice guy.
There's not enough nude orgies up in this mountain.
There would be in this book. Maybe with a Yeti. Nobody knows. Hasn't been written yet.
Maybe he creates a Yeti out of some sex or blood sacrifice with the mountain goat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're ideating right now.
Yeah, we gotta turn off the record so that we don't give all this away.
These ideas are gonna be popping up everywhere.
That's okay. If someone takes the way we just explained stuff, they're gonna write something terrible, and nobody's gonna care.
That's true. Good.
Mm-hmm. So, is this your first book with Cemetery Dance?
My first standalone, I had a novella in the Cold, Cold Ground that came out last year. It was New England novellas.
I have to check that out.
It's good. Ed Kurtz was the editor. He did the Connecticut story. Eric Nunnally's in it. Morgan Sylvia's in it. William Carl's in it. Kyle Rader. Me and Ed. Yeah, it's really good. And Morgan's story, she's got the main story. Hers is the best. It was on the shortlist for the Stoker nominations. It's really good.
Well, then it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was your experience working with them?
It was good. It was good.
They got a big name.
They don't move quickly. They bought Faith of Dawn, I think in 20, it might have even been 2021. And from the beginning, they said 2024. So they had it for 2 years.
Right.
That's what we agreed on.
Yeah. All right. So they hit their mark, which is great. They
did hit their mark.
I have a story in their New Voices in Terror anthology that was supposed to come out in 2012. I'm going to be retired when the time comes out. Well, they just have to change it. Old retired voices in horror. Because I think most of us in that book are in our 50s right now.
A glimpse back to 2012 in horror.
Yeah. It was so much fun doing all those signing sheets.
Mm-hmm. The industry, it's not a fast moving industry. It's an industry that teaches us patience.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to have glacially paced patience for publishing. And I have some publishers, you know, I give them something. I know it's going to be two and a half. One was 4 years, just kind of like similar to what you just had.
Yeah.
I was like, whatever. It'll come out when it comes out. I'm just glad I'm just glad I wrote it.
Right.
You know, because a lot of people say they want to write.
Yeah.
But they never get to the end. Or if they do get to the end, they don't go to the next book.
Well, and it's irritating that there, when people say, oh, how do you find time to write? Or how do you have time to write? And it's like, well, I have to make time to write.
I always say, turn off the TV for an hour. I'm not telling you all day. Just shut it off for an hour. You can do a lot in an hour a day.
Absolutely.
What's your favorite writing? No, do you have a writing routine? And what's your favorite place to write? Or do you make
sense? I do it the first thing when I wake up in bed.
So you just grab the laptop,
just grab the laptop and go.
I've tried that. I am a horrible morning writer.
No, it's I can't write in the evenings or at night. And I feel like if I miss my morning window, I'm like, well, I can't write today.
Right.
It's done. It's done. I missed it.
And I'm a morning person, but I can't write in the morning. I did a whole book in the morning and I hated every minute of it, which is hate writing.
Yeah. Sometimes that's fun though. Yeah. 6 to 7 is my prime time.
See, I'm like 7 to 8 at night. We're opposites. Mm-hmm. And I ride hot hands. So like if I went to the library, I had success in the library, I will keep going to the library until it runs out. And then I'll write in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. I'll never write in the area that I have set off for writing.
No,
it's everywhere else, but.
No, I actually never write at my computer.
No. It feels like work then, I think. I don't know what it is.
I can edit there. That's my favorite editing spot.
Oh, I could edit anywhere. I could edit in the middle of chaos. It's like, they're like, my family's like, why do we all have to be quiet and get out of the way when you're writing? But when you edit, we can have the TV on. We're all in here talking. I'm like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fine. Do you need to edit? You need quiet time for editing too?
I live alone, so it's all quiet time.
Man, can we trade for like 6 months?
Week?
Come on, you'll be here. There's three women that live here. My daughters are in their
mid-20s.
Yes. They'll take care of you.
You guys ever try getting up every night at 3:15 in the morning, like Amityville Horror, and writing then?
No, but I'm always tending the fire right around then. Just blocks of wood I just keep putting on because I'm freezing.
I like to go to the Red Room at 3:15 in the morning every
Oh, my Lord. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're thinking of another cryptid. But I do agree. Put something in between.
I'm almost done the first draft of a new book that kind of plays with the idea of brood parasites. Things that replace the young of something else with kind of changeling brood parasite.
Nice.
A lot of things that look like 3-year-olds getting attacking and killing in this book.
Very Cronenbergian.
Yeah,
you worry me. I'd like to have a beer with you sometime.
I think horror people are the nicest people and the safest people because all of these ideas, we have an outlet for them so they don't fester inside and get infected and make us murder.
Yeah, romance writers, you got to be scared crapless of.
Well, haven't there been like 2 news stories in the last year or so about romance writers killing their husbands?
Yeah, that doesn't shock me.
The horror people don't murder.
No, we just murder on the page. Have you ever, I guarantee the answer.
Well, somebody, no, I haven't.
No, have you ever murdered somebody in a book that you wish you could strangle in real life?
I hope that, yes. And I hope that it is subtle enough and, probably the people I want to kill in real life don't read books, so it's fine.
I had a novella that I wrote, and in it, the main character kills my boss by his first and last name. My editor said, is this guy real? I said, yeah, he's my boss. I said, nothing gave me more pleasure than writing this scene. He's like, do you still work for this guy? I'm like, yeah. He goes, change the name. He goes, you already wrote it. You got it out of your system, but change the name for the book.
Did you just like change the first letters?
Oh, no. Trust me, I had that idea. And he was like, change the whole name. So no
instead of Bob, we'll call him Robert.
Yes.
Yeah, Jack Campisi doesn't work. Call him Whack Campedi.
Yes. Nobody will know.
Jake Camp Sleazy.
I'm saving that name for one day. Nice. Camp Sleazy is going to be my slasher. a camp for porn star kids. That's why they call it Camp Sleazy.
We're brainstorming again. I'm already working on a one man play called Alistair and Me, where I play Yeti.
Oh,
and Alistair Crowley.
Before we started the show, we were talking about getting a picture of Kristen, right?
Yes.
I have a Kristen Dearborn picture story. So this is a while ago. We had messaged each other or whatever, and you had a picture, like it was a black and white picture, and it showed the bats tattoos, and I loved that, and I wanted to get that tattoo. So I printed it up, put it in my bag, and then forgot about it. And then one day I'm going through my bag at home, and then here's a picture of Kristen Dearborn that I know it's Kristen Dearborn. My wife doesn't know it's Kristen
Dearborn. Uh-oh.
She's like, who is that, and why do you have that picture in your bag? And a picture looks like it's been there for a while.
Well, and the tattoo is, it's the other side.
That one. See that?
Oh, nice.
I absolutely love that. Yeah. That's common. It's still on my list. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she was just like, who is that?
You're pretty
badass. Well, look at those tattoos. And thank God you were an author. Because once you're an author, it's like, oh, it's part of your weird, whacked out group of writers.
We can get away with a lot of stuff. You can like Google, how do alligators kill? What do swamp Nazis like?
How long will a heartbeat after it's out?
What drugs for skunk ape? Viagra skunk ape? Question mark?
Most people ever killed in a small space. Yeah. And then walking out and about, we can be what we want to be. And if anyone questions, like horror writer.
Yeah.
All right.
Ooh, it's research.
Yeah. I wear nothing but black t-shirts with horror movie posters because I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. Jack, do you have anything? You look like your mind is germinating. A question.
He's working on the play. He's...
I want to know more about your tattoos, but we don't have time. I think that tattoo is so cool. The bats.
It is. It's one of my favorite I've ever seen. And it's simple.
It brings joy to my heart.
My next tattoo is a Bigfoot giving a finger to a UFO. But after that, I should get the bats.
I have to finish the, this is mirrored, so it's weird. I have to finish the octopus here.
Oh, wow.
Holy.
It's not quite done, and it's been in a state of not quite done for 6 years now.
That's all right.
Yeah.
It looks pretty damn good.
It's pretty close.
Yeah. Nobody will mess with you.
No. No, they don't. They tend not to. They know to be afraid.
Bats and octopuses. What the hell's going on with her?
Where can people find you and your book?
Amazon.com. Or KristenDearborn.com, which really just links back to Amazon. Or Cemetery Dance.
Or her kitchen.
Or my kitchen. Right now.
So, but again, the book, and it'll be Flash Up Jackson. He put images in here, but it's Faith of Dawn. Love this book. I have about 100 Bigfoot books on my Kindle. I'm so glad I have a print copy. I prefer print to anything else. Mm-hmm. But with so many Bigfoot books, you just take a chance. Mm-hmm. I just want to take the cheapest chance possible.
That's fair.
Yeah. But this is like the exists of Bigfoot in Skunk Ape world.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, if you like skunk apes, you it depends what your tolerance is for shenanigans. Check out Cocksucker and Cocksucker 2 by Lucas Milliron if you want to
more
delve into a whole different world.
Shenanigans.
They're filthy.
Great one to read on a plane so that somebody can look. Well, what are you reading?
Hopefully you're sitting next to some kids. But this book won't offend anybody up at the cover. In fact, it might get some people going, what is that? Is that King Kong?
Yeah. King
Kong sounds like a spiritual help book.
Oh, yeah. I meant to ask, how did you come up with the title?
It's the name of the cult. So I think that I write good books, but titles are really hard. I really struggle with the titles. And generally when I'm working, I'll go with, so for many years, the working title for that, the file name was Skunk Ape exclamation point. It's just like monster exclamation point is my file naming convention. I try to, when I know the editors that I'm working with, I try to talk them into naming the book for me. Sometimes it works. When I was working with Dark Fuse a lot, I could get to the point where I was like, here's a manuscript. What are you going to name it? Right. But that doesn't always work. So
a lot of times they just, especially if it's, you find a name you love, guaranteed they're going to throw that away.
Yeah. Well, I don't feel like I've ever found a name that I loved. And I'm not sure I love that name, but.
Sure. I had a book I wrote. It's a weird Western, had everything. It had Bigfoots and the devil and black-eyed kids and ghosts. And it was set in this real abandoned mining town. And I said to my editor, I said, I want to call this Horror in the High Plains. So he goes, there's no plains in this book. He says, so we're going to call it Hellhole. And I'm like, and just name my book after a Spinal Tap song. Yeah. That's all I think of now. So when I got the chance to rename it with another publisher, they go, oh, so we'll put Hell. No, Hellhole's gone. Ghost Mine. Just anything but Hellhole.
Ghost Hole.
That'll be the third time around.
Nice.
I'll save that for the next time. And I'll give you a shout out.
Yes. Excellent.
Well, this has been awesome. I'm so glad that I finally got to meet you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jack, I don't care about seeing you again, but it's nice that you're here.
Mm-hmm. I had a blast. This is great. I definitely got to check this out. I'm the audience that doesn't know you or mm-hmm. I'm not mm-hmm. I know more than the average bear on cryptids, but you know, I'm not like him.
I even pulled out like some of my Bigfoot movies too.
I see the Mothman license plate.
Oh, yeah. By the way, if you want the sickest, Night of the Demon.
Ooh.
It's a Bigfoot movie. It was shot for about 75 cents and 3 hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But it has some scenes in it that will haunt you to your dying day. So yeah, I think you could stream it.
Movie scenes that scared me.
Here we go.
Bobcat Goldthwait Bigfoot movie.
Oh, Willow Creek.
Willow Creek. So as a whole, it was fine. But that one tent scene, that is the scene that has most scared me in a movie. The tension that is built in that scene is phenomenal.
That's her actual fear reaction because they didn't tell her ahead of time what was going on. Yeah. So like
scary.
When she was jumping, she was really jumping because she had no idea.
Well, it showed through. The only other movie fear experience was I turned 17 the year Blair Witch came out. And that was my first R-rated movie that I was actually old enough to see in the theater without sneaking into. And I saw it pretty close to when it opened in a packed theater.
Oh, yeah.
And just the audience reacting to the movie was a magical, terrifying experience.
Yeah, that was a cool movie.
I saw Blair Witch Project before it was released widespread. Mm-hmm. It was only playing in select theaters in certain cities. And we drove into New York City on like the hottest day ever and saw it in some theater. And when that movie ended, you could hear a pin drop. It was quiet. Yeah. Everybody walked out, and then once people got outside into the sunlight, oh my God, what did you think? And everybody started debriefing, and you know, some people didn't quite get, and somebody's like, no, it's like at the beginning with a kid into the, oh yeah, oh my God, mind blown. It was one of the coolest experiences.
Yeah, I think that's why movie theaters are, we can't let the movie theater die, because that like communal reaction experience is like, it's cool to be by yourself with the lights off and watching a scary movie, but it's different when you're just in the room with a bunch of other people who are pumped to be there.
Your movies like Friday the 13th would never make 12 of them, 13 mm-hmm. of them. Mm-hmm. If people were just watching home streaming, it's nowhere near the same experience.
Yeah.
That's why I go to the drive-in. Drive-ins are a vibe.
Yeah, I believe it. That'll be my summer project.
Yeah, seriously, you're going to love it. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Everybody, by faith at dawn, or so help me God, I will come to your house and kick down your door.
And my dog just got that stainless steel knee, so we got to pay that knee off.
Yeah, knees ain't cheap. So let's go, people. thanks so much, Kristen.
All right, good night.
All right, folks, we'll see you next time on
Monster Men.